Hello and welcome to the international edition of my podcast Rad Ab. I'm your host Linda Rad and I interview entrepreneurs who I admire and look up to. I want to know more about their business and work ethics and not only the entrepreneurial endeavors but also what drives them, what inspires them and how do they become so outstanding at what they're doing. I believe you need so much more than just talent and skills to be successful in business. So let's find out what secrets our entrepreneurs will reveal to us. This episode is sponsored by MediaTek Hub Potsdam. It is one of 12 digital hubs in Germany, initiated by the Federal Ministry of Economics and Energy and the only one with a focus on media tech. It encompasses a working space, an accelerator, and an annual conference, and I highly recommend you check it out if you want to start a business or if you want to scale. I'm an entrepreneur myself, and our startup Fragments used to be located at the MediaTek Lab in Potsdam. I will link to their website in my show notes. Today, I am joined by Mariana Santos. She's a journalist and founder of Chicas Poderosas, a nonprofit organization that aims to bring more women into technology. She started this community back in 2013 while she was an ICFJ fellow, and today she runs it full-time with her team and a board of directors. And she was also a JSK Knight Fellow at Stanford in 2015 and a Knight International Journalism Fellow back in 2013-14. Working all across Latin America in major newsrooms and with independent journalists. I met her many, many moons ago at Stanford University, where she organized a week-long workshop / conference evolving around entrepreneurship and innovation and journalism. And we went to, I think it was Google and to NASA, and we were able to connect with some pretty amazing people. And a few years later, she invited me to Lisbon to talk about immersive journalism. And again, she was able to bring together people from all over the world, creating a safe space to experiment and innovate and connect. And she says about herself that she's a Portuguese girl who wants to change the world and is working on it right now. Hi, Mariana. How are you?
Hello, Linda. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
So how's it going with changing the world?
Well, it's going with lots of change, starting with the description you have of Chicas Poderosas is back from 2013-14, when we started working with women in technology for them to be more digital savvy in their newsrooms. But we have evolved a lot since then. It's been 8 years. And we have moved to empower women journalists, and the leadership of women in media is needed. So we are training women to become more leader, to have more leadership skills, to navigate better, to come up with their own independent news stories and ideas. And most recently, since last year, we start having a quota for other minorities who are not represented in media, such as the community of LGBTQI+. People, indigenous communities, people, Afro-descendant people, people with discapacities, like all of these voices that are not represented in media, because usually the media have a tendency to be led by men, especially in Latin America, and that just replicates the same agenda, and there's no diversity and inclusion in the media. So we are now working more in diversity and leadership for these minorities. Still very focused on women, but not only.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that there's been progress over the past 8 years? I mean, you've worked on this for so long, so you can tell more about the development.
Yes, as you know, it has been ups and downs as everything, but I'm happy the reason why we are still here is because what we have been doing is been creating some effect, some impact. So we are able to, you know, to create new topics in the agenda in Latin America, bringing new conversations to the floor, you know, to the surface, and then ultimately impacting laws, which is the ultimate goal. It's to create a society more balanced and equal. So with some of the stories Chicas Poderosas has been doing, it has been, you know, changing the agenda, then creating impact not only the story impacting directly the person who wrote it, such as, for instance, we did an investigation across Argentina in the 24 states about the access to reproductive and sexual rights for women and non-binary people during COVID. And it was the first time that such, data research was done for this community of people. So even in one state, in Cordoba, the study was, it was a transgender journalist was writing about how she was rejected her hormones and her treatment after the surgery she had. And because it was COVID time, one of the clinics, they closed. They said, no, you cannot have it. When she published the story, the clinic was immediately reaching out and saying, you can come and get your treatment. We are sorry. And then in Cordoba, it was considered investigation of public interest because for the first time this data was being registered. Mm-hmm. And lately in parliament, when they were discussing the lay for abortion in Buenos Aires, in Argentina, they were saying that women do not die when they get raped and then they get miscarriages. They were saying they not die. And then one deputy, she said, look, there's a study Chicas Poderosas did that, relevates data about all of these, and actually more than 80% increasement of women being dead during COVID times because of miscarriages that are considered abortion. And as we know, scientifically, 1 in 4 women get the miscarriages of their eggs. And it's a biological thing that happens worldwide. And then a girl or a woman going to jail because she has these miscarriages happening, it's like just nonsense. So at least these conversations of Chicas, talking about the situations of women and non-binary people suffering enormous situations during COVID, just shine light on topics that are not, because they are not talked about, it feels like they do not exist, and therefore the laws do not address them. So with this, the law in Argentina approved that now women have free, safe and secure assistance, hospitalar assistance when miscarriages or abortions. So this is small steps. It's still topics that are so hard to talk about that they cannot go mainstream from one day to the other. But for us, for me and for the team and for the community, it's important that we, women and non-binary people, get together, tell these stories, and then slowly we're going to address inequalities in society. And it still proves the power of journalism, which has mm-hmm. been a little bit lost. I mean, with all this fake news and all these, political tendersome that we've been living through, journalism kind of decreased its power or its perception from its audience. So I think this is another opportunity to really revigorate trust and hope and believe that the news can actually be a democratic tool mm-hmm. in societies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing to hear that your work basically has direct political impact and that they can show your work and therefore get some political decisions out of that. And my question is, you have such a big goal to bring diversity into newsrooms. How do you start? Like, where do you start?
The first job I got was to become the designer, digital designer, interactive designer for some data projects at The Guardian. And when I first started, I was the only woman in a team of seven men. And within the technological department of The Guardian, there were around, at that in 2010, 11, around 200 developers, from which there were only 3 women in the room. And they were project managers or myself, digital designer. And it was like, okay, there's not so many role models. And then I had a CTO at the time. She was a woman and I looked up to her. When she blocked my opportunity to be the next leader of my team, I really felt, okay, if I don't have a woman supporting me, who are my role models? And then I decided, okay, if I want to work in this industry, I need to do something about it. We need to find role models. We need to empower ourselves, ourselves women in my case, that we can as well come up with journalistic ideas to tell stories the better ways and more engaging. And we should be listened to, not just because we don't occupy leadership positions. I think all ideas are relevant. So because I started with myself, seeing how much I was not being heard, made actually, impacting the work that I was doing. So when actually I was rejected from being the team leader of my team in The Guardian when my boss left to the New York Times. And instead of me, they put a man like double of my age. My entire team quit at that time. The developers, they all quit because, you know, in this industry, not only do we need role models, we need mentors, we need people who help us see the future and guide us. And, you know, in the beginning of our career, we have so much energy. We just need to be well channeled just so the energy is not wasted. I was very lucky to have my boss, Alistair Dent. He was a developer at The Guardian at the time. And he really took me in under his wing. And he not only protected me, not much protection, but more mentorship and guidance. And he was always there for me and telling me to move this pixel, you know. And together we were stronger. He was making me the best designer he could. And I appreciated that so much that when he left, I had no reason to be in that newsroom anymore. Even if it was such a good newsroom, even there was a possibility of growing, and then I saw it, there wasn't immediately. And then I just realized that we need mentoring. So I'm going to create the same process replicated by hundreds of times and try to have people who can, you know, guide others and mm-hmm. so we can all become better. So that's as well how it started. And I started with myself, me mentoring other women. And then because we were more, I needed more women to mentor other women and men and everybody mentoring these women. And then the things just started to grow, you know, and the need of having a leadership that is not just playing a pure masculine role of leadership. It's very important because it allows space for other realities to show and to have a more inclusive and diverse project at the end of the day and product.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a network that female journalists and diverse journalists can rely on, something that they haven't had ever, basically.
Or either have ever or, you know, I did not study journalism and I'm a journalist. Yes, I studied graphic design. And In Chicas Poderosas, what we try is not only to give the immediate tools of journalism that is needed right now, as give the support that is needed right now, because maybe 5 years ago, what you study at the university is no longer in use right now. It's mm-hmm. Technology is moving so fast. We need to update ourselves at the speed of light. So Chicas Poderosas now sits in between a mentor with a curriculum that is like forward looking and it's very updated and it doesn't take years to update itself. And it's looking to how can we collaboratively, journalists, work together to get a better product. Because at the end of the day, we don't need to do everything ourselves, but we can collaborate.
Mm-hmm. So how does it work exactly? Can I become a member of Chicas Poderosas? And then what happens?
So Chicas Poderosas has been going through different stages. Now we have a membership that aims to provide anyone who wants to have access to all trainings of Chicas can become a member for $3 a month. So what we wish is that we have as many people in this membership so they can get all the courses that we are creating, all the content, all the job opportunities, both inside Chicas Poderosas and in other organizations who are needing diverse journalists, you know, gender perspective in stories. So anyone can just go to the Chicas website and become a member for $3. And then in the other hand, when we do events or when we do, you know, mediathons, which is like a weekend where 100 people get together from journalists, designers, developers, and then we bring together as well civic media to pitch on stories and realities that are underrepresented and that need a little bit of attention. So we do the matching of people who want to tell stories about these stories and realities and then the civic society that could do with a little bit of help on storytelling. And then for 2 days, these people connect. There's like workshops, there's like, you know, conferences about the topics, very short, and then people get together in teams of 10 and they choose the topics they want to work on. They divide the tasks. It's like a pop-up newsroom. And then for 1 or 2 months, they are working on their stories with mentors, with editors, and with project managers. And then at the end, we do a partnership with media outlets around that region or that country. And then we do a publish all the stories at the same day. And then we press, you know, the agenda on those topics. And then it became either either becomes trending topic or it becomes published by different news organizations, and then it becomes a conference or a seminar. So it always can evolve different ways.
Wow. Can you tell us more about the process of your daily work? How do you manage people and projects and events like the one you just described across the globe?
Okay, let me tell you something. Since we are here talking about honesty, not everything is roses, you know. It has been very hard at times at Chicas. So, you know, in the first years, I was excited about being a fellow at ICFJ, the International Center for Journalists. Then I was moving from country to country in Latin America. And then I got a job in US where I tried to continue doing Chicas, and then I realized I couldn't. So I quit the job and I fully dedicated myself to Chicas. And we've been from a totally voluntary organization with people very passionate about, you know, changing the reality for women, getting together and working, to it taking up all our lives. So we started to recruit for fundraising so we could have money to pay salaries to people that are competitive enough so people don't leave immediately after 1 month. And it's been 8 years. People come, people go. And it has not been always easy, you know, especially in such a small enterprise, which most of my team members are my good friends, become more than my family. And then there's like, you know, conflict, or there's development of the organization that does not fit into everybody's wishes to continue. And then people split, and then the team breaks, and then it feels like everybody goes down again, and then we need to build up again. And then on the other hand, we have the board who is making us accountable and making sure we are following everything we say we do. So it's a lot of pressure from different cities, different places, and it's not at all easy. At times I have thought about quitting. At times I did not have any energy for living, for breathing, or for talking to people. You know, for a couple of years I was really, really burned out, trying to just survive. And at the same time, thinking that Chicas is such something so beautiful and powerful that I could not, or it would be so hard to close it. And even if I close it as an organization, it will continue as a movement, because this is a mindset. Being a Chica Poderosa is just being someone who believes in yourself and who wants to make a change in the world, a positive impact, and actually takes initiative and takes ownership and responsibility. You know, sometimes there's like in 2 months, we don't have money to continue. This has happened, and this is creates a stressful vibe in the people. And then when someone in the team member leaves, it the dynamics break again. We need to build again. So it's not always easy. And, you know, as a leader of this organization, I oftentimes have to take ultimate decisions that, you know, I have to make the call. And sometimes it's not an easy decision, and it's not going to please everybody. So there's lots of not liking you. There's lots of, you know, you have to deal with circumstances of friends or family, of business decisions. It's a lot, but I do this every day still, and I still ask myself this question because I love it, and I feel that if I can be contributing, me and my team and my community, to something bigger than ourselves, if we are contributing for the well-being of womankind and diversity to be accepted and not be judged, and then we are working somewhere, and this makes me feel like I'm contributing and Chicas is contributing. So through the work of so many people as well in Chicas, because the dynamics go up and down all the time, different people coming, going, and it's beautiful to see that there is always a fire, like there's always someone holding the fire, making sure it doesn't go down. You know, even me as a leader of the organization, I need sometimes that my team members give me the hand and push me up when I'm so tired and exhausted. And you know, and these 2 last years have been extremely challenging. You know, in the beginning we were trying to cope with it, but then after the second year, it's like, you know, I only know 2 people in my team of 10. Everybody else, I have been working just digitally. I never met personally. So even that, you know, the drive of Chicas used to be, I thought, the emotion and the magic of being together and connecting and feeling the energy of each other. Now we are apart from Atlantic, with Atlantic in the middle, and we have not been having the chance to meet yet. So right now, actually, I'm focusing my energy in doing a fundraising campaign to meet my team, just to get money for us to meet, you know. It's a basic thing, but it's important because we don't know what's going to happen. The world is a little bit upside down. People are with a little feeling of, I don't know, feeling of not knowing what's coming. So I just want to be there for my team. I want to hug them. I want to, you know, we are, work is such an important part of our life, but should not take over. So we always make sure that our work at Chicas is aligned with our purpose of life. It's a, you know, that's what makes the work easier. Meaning every day you wake up and you go, and this is aligned to my values. This is, you know, I feel comfortable and safe here. This is the space we want to create. Because if it's not like that, it's not worth for us to have pain and to suffer doing something that is not making us feel alive.
Mm-hmm.
So my day-to-day life is like right now, since the last 2 years, I'm here in Portugal in the south, which is pretty amazing. It's like countryside. Okay, I don't have so many cinemas and theaters, but I have the beach. I can go running, playing with my dogs and cats. And I wake up in the morning, do yoga or swim. Then I have all afternoon calls because my team is in Latin America. So we use 4 to 5 hours simultaneous between Latin America, West Coast and Portugal. So I work in my afternoon, and then sometimes I have calls until dinner time, or when we have, you know, things to deal with, we might take until 10, 11, 12. And I really, since the burnout, I never again want to be caught up by working too much and killing myself, because I don't want to go there again. And I'm thankful for the burnout. I think it can actually be super beneficial. So I'm much more careful with how I use and I invest my energy, because my energy became my currency. Sometimes I don't have enough energy to finish the day, and that's really bad. So I need to manage it better. And by leading an organization and having to take hundreds of decisions, it can really tire you. So I'd really try to have a good food diet. You know, I am vegetarian. I don't eat meat, but I eat sometimes fish, but mostly veggies, and do sports, yoga, meditation, running, swimming. And again, it's one day after the other. I just realize sometimes I get anxiety if I don't get the money for Chicas, or if my team is unhappy or something. And I just think everybody, like me and you, are trying to go one day after the other. And it's okay.
Exactly.
And lately, with this distancing, I think it changed me, and I think it changed other people. But for me, it changed me so much. So we need to be as well kind with ourselves on getting adapted to this new way of living, this new way of interacting with people. No, and be a little bit calmer and slower. Like for me, definitely I want to go slower. I used to spend my life in a plane going from one country to the other, and I really think that is not sustainable, not for ourselves as humans, but as well not for the environment. And yeah, I'm trying to find healthier ways to live, and even thinking about moving to the countryside and creating a community in the land. You know, thinking about potentially future headquarters of Chicas, where people could come and just, you know, do a retreat of journalism and of taking care of themselves.
I love that. Yeah, and I was going to say regarding the pandemic, in that sense, it might have even helped us a little bit to calm down, like you said, and to realize how our lifestyle hasn't been sustainable and hasn't been good, maybe even for our mental health. And you just mentioned even burnout, which is basically the end of that road. And
or the beginning for others. For me, it can be seen as the beginning, because with what I learned there, I'm not going there anymore. Nobody's going to cut me in a burnout again. Definitely. So for me, it was a good, but for other people, it might be a cancer, might be a disease, might be a death, you know, like how much screaming do we need to listen to our body and to our, like, I think we are not, when this thing was planned, we were not planned to work so much and to dedicate so many hours to other things, not than our lives, our families.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's difficult for people who work, for something that has a greater impact than just trying to make money? Like you said, you want to have an impact in society and the way newsrooms look and the way or the topics that are covered in newspapers and or in general in media companies. So I think you have a greater purpose. And I think because of that, it's more difficult to stop.
Totally. I think so. You know, I already gave up my, you know, this vanity that we have when we have a career, we have a job post, we have a salary, we have some power. I gave up that, you know, I don't give a damn, you know, my career status level. Like, I feel, and I was talking to my friends, I feel like we chicas, I have done more than what I could imagine with chicas. I mean, in terms of dedication or proving myself to whoever, myself, to my father, whatever, I don't think I have to prove anything else. So anything that comes now, it's bonus. And I really feel like taking the opportunity and advantage that this is working, it's working a little bit, even it's not massive, but, you know, even our possibility of voting didn't come from one day to the other, it comes slowly. Mm-hmm. And I feel it's worth it. And I feel I want to continue to be alive because it's worth what I'm contributing, you know. It feels like a cycle is sustainable. I mean, it's working. So, but at the end, the other hand, I'm sometimes so tired that I don't have the energy that I had when I was 20. So what I'm converging and transforming into right now is that I'm learning from a book called Lead Together. One of the authors is Susan Busterfield. She's in New Zealand. She's a coach and she's now transitioning from a corporate life into a more permaculture and a more sustainable life. And I'm doing a course with her called Lead Together. And this Lead Together is how can we share governance of an organization, of a community, of a project, and not always looking for an authoritarian figure. That we can become the leaders of the parts that we are in charge. So I right now I'm coming back to my team. Even today we're gonna have a call in a few hours, because I'm like I want to invite everybody that is in the team right now to step out of their role and try to use other hats and try to do other tasks of the colleagues. Not only for us to understand the work that our colleagues are doing, as well for us to be able to contribute with other ideas. And for us to create this network that we need to work together. We need to see each other as allies and teammates and like family members that support us. And what I felt is, you know, in 11 or 12 years ago at The Guardian with this Alistair giving me all his mentorship and guidance, I could feel that he wanted genuinely that I became better. And I would love that my entire team can share this feeling of wanting to each other become better, that we self-develop while we are developing the organization. Because as well in this course, one thing that I read is that burnout does not come out of you working too much or uncontrollably. It comes out of you not getting self-development at work. So yeah, you can work a lot, and that gives you a feeling that you are learning a lot and getting experience, but if you don't get that return of your investment in your personal development, then this is what's causing you sadness and lack of energy and tiredness, and when you push so much, no? So yeah, I think this is you found me, and we are talking after not talking for so many years. We are talking in a very big transition moment that I don't know if in a year or two if Chicas is gonna still be alive, but what I can tell is that we're gonna try our best to to challenge and to try to make it alive and kicking. So, you know, we are going to do some rotations and then come back again and reanalyze ourselves, because our organizations are changing. People are working fully remote. We never connect physically. How it's going to be human interactions at work in the future? And this is something I'd like to, you know, as long as we can keep the job feeling safe, good, inspiring, and you feel like you're growing, I think we will want to continue doing this.
Wow, that sounds very inspiring. And to be honest, also very open to basically anything. That sounds scary.
I know.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I would love to hear, okay, Linda, this is the plan that I have for the next 5 years. We might pivot a little bit, but, you know, and we're going to get money from here and money from there. And then we're going to do this event and that event. And it seems like you're at this point where you're very open to any outcome, which I think from the outside looking in, looking at you right now, it sounds like the most sane thing that we can do right now, to be open for anything and to be open to experiment even on an organizational level.
Well, let's see if it works. You know, this feeling of having nothing to lose. This is a feeling that women in Latin America and LGBT, they oftentimes feel they have nothing to lose when everything was removed from them, even dignity, you know. So in my case, what I mean, I have nothing to lose, is like this. I have gone through the burnout, which I think is a hard part on the career of a person. So I understood what's my limit. So I'm not going there at all again. And with the energy that I have right now, with the things that need to be done, which are like maybe 10 massive changes, if I have to head all the 10 massive changes, I'm going to get crazy and things are not going to get well done. What I wish is that my team, who some of them are junior, that they can understand that they can take a step and use the job, use Chicas Poderosas' job as an opportunity to develop their career. And with this, I believe we will have a team that is doing what they love the most, you know, and really this, how do you create culture of trust and safe space? It's by everyday actions, no? So, yeah, and right now, before, it's like this, you either have money, talent or time, and you need the three of them to make projects and to make, we have the talent and we have the time, but oftentimes we don't have the money. And now we have a bit of money and we have the talent and we have the time. So what we want to do is not just take the money and do the same old thing. We want, because we've been doing impact analysis in everything we do, and there are some points here and there that we can see we can improve. So when we do these pilots, opening pilots, for instance, for my team, is going to be 15 days trying to do something, you know, other role. So I want to see other perspectives. I want to see people connecting to everything that needs doing. It's like a scrum meeting of developers where you have all the post-its. I want everybody to take responsibility by all post-its, at the same time being able to ask the colleague for help, and we can be there to support each other. This feeling of having nothing to lose is because every time we try to go out of script and we try something new and we bring new visions in, we do a project that is better than the previous one. So with this, you know, mindset, we are trying to always challenge what's possible and at the same time try to move the needle, always almost, you know, a little bit of our out of our comfort zone. It's the area where we can learn a little bit more, but always with the sensation that if it doesn't go well, we are, you know, able to analyze it and step back again and say, let's go through that, you know, way. But this inspiration of becoming kind of a lab of experiments, I think is one ingredient that is fundamental for the development of anyone who wants to develop of work. If you are always doing the same thing, how can you grow and develop, no?
I think this kind of wisdom comes with a lot of experience and with time, actually. You have to go through certain steps in to be where you are right now and to say, you know, let's be open to not anything, but you know what I mean, to new things, to experimenting. And I like that you say there's nothing to lose. It is kind of freeing to be on that side.
Totally, because it's like this. We have a tendency to think we can control things, right? But we can't. So we might just as well just open freely, and we cannot control. Especially after these 2 years, we really cannot control. You know, like 3 months ago, I didn't know if Chicas would have to close this year or not, because I didn't know with COVID how would be the investment strategy of the organizations. Just now they are starting to open a little bit and wanting to sponsor. You know, two months ago, I thought maybe Chicas is not going to last until 22. So it's every day. It's so volatile like this. But that means we can run programs and we can run, you know, research and development and push our boundaries and try to to be there where the media needs us right now. It's as well, media needs are changing every day.
Mm-hmm. I read that you work with a board of, you work with a board. How does that look like? And what if you disagree? Like, how does that look like?
Yeah, that happens. I just had a board call this week. And actually, they put the finger in the ones where we are not operating or where things are not going smooth. They are there to address. As well, they have a function of helping with fundraising. But because most of my team board directors do fundraising for someone else, there's a conflict of interest. So I'm still learning how to build the board. And with the board, we are building a new board. You know, it's always evolving. Sometimes they give me directions in terms of finances, in terms of ideas and investments, team dynamics, processes. So oftentimes, sometimes we don't agree. When they don't agree, they tell me to do this or that or that as like a team. And then I do. And then we have this back and forward. I test, for instance, we did tests of different membership models with them involved on board. And then we had to drop one and start a new one. And they are very, well, supportive, but mainly they are executives, you know, people with more experience that can guide us. And when there are, you know, conflict, or when there are situations that we don't know how to address, like harassment or, you know, situations like that that happen with our community, they are there to help. But oftentimes we have a tendency to be aligned because we go through the year, we have 4 meetings per year, plus, you know, any external meetings for feedback or for helping mm-hmm. put together a proposal. They are this kind of mentors that are there if mm-hmm. you need their help. But honestly, the board is there to support, not to do anything on your behalf. So it's really supportive. It's like a bouncing of ideas, of budgets, of strategies. It's very nice. It's like getting together with a bunch of friends, mm-hmm. old friends from old times, and you sit and you strategize. It's nice. It's really nice. Interesting. They have been very supportive, but of course at times I get very defensive when they attack me or the team or the work, and I'm just learning what those triggers mean to me, you know. Mm-hmm. I think this is a supportive network, so it's ever evolving, ever changing. So, for mm-hmm. instance, we started with friends and friends of the network, and now we are reaching to people that we might not know, but might be aligned with the things we want to do.
Mm-hmm. And so Chicas Poderosas has a vision, of course, but then it's also an organization where you actually need entrepreneurial skills. How much time did that take for you to understand the business side of running an organization?
It took me a lot of time. In the beginning, it was really hard. So in the beginning, I was just a fellow from ICFJ. Then I transformed it into a non-for-profit with a colleague called Vicky Hammerstedt. She's the director of Berkeley Advanced Media Institute. And she has experience, and she came to me and said, why don't we open as a non-for-profit? So we did. And then both of us did accounting, operations, everything you can imagine. And that was I was crying when I had to do accounting without having any knowledge, you know. So that was the very stressful part until I understood mm-hmm. I cannot do this. I need someone doing accounting. And then someone came, and then, you know, operations director that helps with all operations. Otherwise, you have to take care of, you know, renting a room, hiring, security, cleaning, food, getting tickets from speakers. Like, you need a team. So yeah, then I first I got with Vicky, the two co-founders, co-directors, and everything voluntary. Then I grew to have two more, you know, communications and program director. We were 3. And then we get an operations, and, you know, and it has been forward, back and forth. Because I'm in Portugal running a business in US that has action in Latin America. So it's a little bit complicated. But it's working, you know,
imagine.
It's working. And yeah, I think it's crazy. I never, before, I didn't know anything about business. I'm a designer that went to journalism, that started an organization. And then, okay, I learned by doing. And then I went to do courses, you know. I had to do leadership development in organizations. Now I'm doing this Lead Together course. I mean, I do lots of side courses so I can get the skills that I need to lead an organization when I did not study leadership or management, or I've just been grabbing these skills along the way and trying to do it with as much empathy as possible, you know. But yeah, I'm not a businesswoman naturally. I became one with my entrepreneurial path. I thought I was going to be an artist, and I ended up doing a business out of a journalism project when I was a designer, not a journalist. So it's like my life has taken a very diverse path. Mm-hmm. I'm very thankful, and I want to continue to flow, you know. I'm open, and because I feel the energy. I feel that I'm mm-hmm. here to serve and to help, and I really love collaborating with other colleagues. And telling stories is my passion, although I'm not telling so many stories now. I'm providing the space for other people to tell, but it's still part of the game. And as long as I can contribute, I will be put myself available to make mm-hmm. these, you know, these chicas, these, you know, collaborative projects in journalism, trying to really make journalism alive.
And I think running a business can also be a very creative job, because you, like you said, you have so many people that you have to work with, and you have to put visions into specific tasks, and they come to life through projects. That's a very creative work.
It is. And this thing of being, because if you are your own boss, you can kind of play by as you want. And right now I would love my team to play the boss. You know, I want them to really, like I share with them as well, the board call, because it's important for all of us to, you know, to be part of this game and to be a piece in this puzzle. So it's not just waiting that your paycheck comes. No, you understand everything, how everything works. At any point, you can take the lead of the organization. That's, you know, what I wish. It's like a moving vehicle, and anytime any of us can take the wheel.
Wow. Mariana, last question. What advice would you give to a young female journalist who is just starting out?
Go do lots of training and experience and connect with people that you think are good people. I mean, of course, but I mean, in the newsroom, for me, it was so important to have a mentor since day one, not only to make me feel comfortable, but to make me feel that I belong there and that I can develop and guide me the way there. This is a very egoistic world, I think, and one where you can find lots of competition. So I would say get an ally. If you are young and starting, you know, the older people, they have their own space they earned. So try to be friends, try to make bridges, connect with people. I really believe in connecting. Like, I'm always trying to bring the others, the best of others out. So I'm always looking for people who want to bring the best out of me as well. That would be my biggest recommendation, as well as travel a lot. I mean, now with COVID, I don't know how hard it is to travel, but back in the days, if it's not travel by plane, is go places, go newsrooms, go small and big, see the challenges of big newsrooms, small newsrooms, local, national, international, and do not ever, ever think that you cannot get somewhere, because what moves me is that my entire life I heard, because I'm a woman, there's so much things you cannot do. And I really don't believe in that. And I'm living my life to prove it, because everything that I was told I couldn't, I'm trying to, you know, to do it. This is this mindset of decreasing the other person's value. I don't really believe in that for any, not for gender, not for nothing. No distinguishing. I think everybody has their right to live and to share a healthy life. So, you know, biggest lesson of this COVID is that I don't want in my life is toxicity. No toxic people, no toxic environments. And when we start having these vibes, I'm moving out, because I really cannot shine in toxicity, and Ark and my team. So this has been like the biggest lesson is like, you know, try to make a safe space and don't let toxicity in, because that will just destroy and decrease relationships, and that's nothing I'm welcoming. So I'm all about good vibes and respecting people. And even in newsrooms, there might be times, hard times for women, but get your allies and be empathic. I think empathy relating to others, how others are feeling from their positions, it's very important.
Thank you so much, Mariana. Thank you for your honesty and for taking your time and for reconnecting.